Ron's a retired Navy chaplain. He served 33 years in the U.S. Navy, Coast Guard, and Marines. Ron currently teaches psychology and military resilience courses and is a subject matter expert for Liberty University Online. During college summers, Ron was a ranger at Philmont Scout Ranch near Red River, New Mexico. He has a B.S. in psychology from the University of West Florida, Master of Divinity degree from New Orleans Seminary, a Master of Theology from Duke University, and a Ph.D. in psychology from North Central University. Ron is an ordained minister with the United Church of Christ and has extensive experience as a pastoral caregiver in a myriad of venues. Come and tell us all about it.
Well, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
So, I thought that with the coming of the new year, it might be good to talk about an important concept called optimism. So the title of my talk this morning is Optimism for the New Year. Because we've got a lot of negative stuff going on politically in our country, economically, and it's easy to dwell on those things. And what we're starting to understand in the field of social science and in the field of psychology in particular is that how we think matters and what we say matters. And you know, it's interesting, as I thought about this, from the time that I was a young man, I was always attracted to the whole notion of positive thinking. You know, and I remember reading Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking, and as I've gotten older, I've realized why. Because when I was younger, I was raised in a lot of negativity. I mean, I went to a fundamentalist church. It was pretty scary. And now I look back on the time, the hours I spent going there, and I'm like, gee whiz, what a waste of time, you know? I mean, scare me to death, you know, Jesus is coming again and he's pissed. You know, I mean, and you never knew if you were saved from one day to the next, so you'd go running to the altar, you know, to get it fixed. That was pretty scary. But I'm very thankful that I had a lot of positive things that helped to balance that, you know. Scouting was one of them, and I had a lot of great mentors who were very positive. So anyway, today I thought we would spend a few minutes talking about the science of optimism. There's a saying, I'm not sure where I found it, but I thought it was profound. It says, two men looked up from prison bars. One saw the muck, one saw the stars. So the meaning in that is you have two people in the same situation. You know, one's looking down. He's like, man, this is, my life is over. You know, I'm a terrible person to be here. You know, this is just the end. And the other guy's looking out the window. And he says, you know what? They can hold my body, but they can't hold my soul. And I'm getting out of here one day, by God, and I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna make something of my life, you know. So you see the difference in energy from one focus to the next. It's pretty profound. Viktor Frankl, who spent some time in a Nazi prison camp, one of the things that he noticed from his experience is the people who maintained a sense of positivity in the midst of most horrific circumstances, who had hope, were the ones that lasted the longest and the ones that made it. And the ones that lost hope the soonest died the quickest. So there's something to this thing called optimism. Psychological science has come a long way. For the last century, we've got a pretty good handle on psychopathology. There's a book called the DSM. It was the four. Now, who knows, they update it ever so often. It's five now. DSM-5. I stopped looking at it. It was so negative. Anyway, it's great for capturing mental disorders because we know a lot about depression. We know a lot about neurosis, psychosis, post-traumatic stress disorder, and all manner of mental ills. Okay. About the middle of the 60s, about 1965, a psychologist by the name of Martin Seligman, said, you know what? Maybe it's time we started looking at people who are doing well, people who are thriving in life. What are they doing? You know, maybe we need to study that. And maybe we need to take our learning from that and apply it to the lives of people who come our way for help. Because in the past, psychological science focused on Freudianism, which, you know, said you got all these deep, dark secrets inside that you need to deal with that are driving your behavior, and our psychiatrists here can help me, you know, could affirm that. And they'd spend hours on the couch ruminating about those things. And then you had B.F. Skinner talking about behaviorism, saying, you know, he wrote a book called Freedom, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, and he pretty much said we really don't have a whole lot of freedom because we're kind of like the rats in the maze. We're trying to get to the end of the maze so we can get the food pellet, you know? Or we're trying to get to the maze so that we can avoid a shock, something adverse. But Seligman, he said, nah, and other positive psychologists for that matter, they're starting to say the profound truth about human beings is that we have the power to change the way that we think. And we have the power in changing the way we think to change our reality. And that's pretty awesome. I mean, it's pretty amazing when as a counselor you have somebody come see you and they're in the prison of the muck. And I've had them. I mean, they're at the point of suicide, some of them. And through cognitive shifts, the way they think, seeing their worldview transform from a place of hopelessness to a place of hopefulness. You know, it's pretty amazing. And the way that you do that, and we'll talk about some of Seligman's techniques, but is you get them to see another reality. Narrative therapists, which is another form of therapy, they say, they take a postmodern constructionist view of reality that says constructs are made up. You know, everything we know from how we dress, you know, to the books we read, it's all made up stuff. So that's very freeing because it says we can change it and we can change our reality. So the question is, do you like the narrative that you're living? And that's what people who come to see me for counseling, they're like, you know, my life is crap. My mother did this to me. I was raised in abuse. And this is my life now. I'm continuing to repeat that cycle. And my question would be, do you like that story? Is that a narrative that is that a life-giving narrative for you? Is that something that you want to live? Or do you want to change that story? Because every day we have the opportunity to change that story. Okay, I better get to my script here. So the question is, are you a glasses half full person? Are you a glasses half empty person? What is pessimism anyway? Well, let me share this with you. This is from Seligman's book. And this is why, you know, you may think this is pretty basic, but this is why it's so important. This is one of the things he wrote, and I think you'll find connection with what's going on today because of what I call pessimistic group think, the whole notion of we all think this way, you know, think about the base. You following me? Group think, the base. These people are all evil. These people are all bad. These colors are bad. You know, we're good, you know, and we've got to take care of our interests, you know, to hell with everybody else. I can hear my son saying, language. You know, he got that from Captain America, but it's great because one of the things about optimism is words matter, right? And words have, actually the Hebrews believed the spoken word had power, and it does, you know? So every time my son says, language, I think to myself, yeah, you're right, thanks. And I actually thank him. I say, thanks, Ronald. Okay, so this is what Seligman says. As you read this book, you'll see that there is an epidemic of depression among adults and among children in the United States today. Depression is not just about mental suffering. It's also about lowered productivity and worsened physical health. If this epidemic continues, I believe that America's place in the world will be in jeopardy. America will lose its economic place to less pessimistic nations than ours. And this pessimism will sap our will to bring about social justice in this country. And I'll have to say, I'm seeing that, you know, in the current political milieu. I see a lot of negativity. And what's great about this march that these ladies are doing, and Seligman talks about the value of pessimism. He said, you know, wait a minute. He said, now, we're not talking about a blind optimism here. He says, we need to value some pessimism because it helps us to see the reality of what's going on today. And then when we see the reality of what's going on today, we can take positive action to change. And that's what, and I'm very proud of my wife and these ladies for going on this march. That's what they're doing. It's very positive. It's very optimistic. But what is pessimism? Although many people have a different definition of what it is, I'll define it as the perceived meaning of events as inherently negative and discouraging. This includes pessimistic blaming of oneself, viewing failure as unrealistically long-lasting, and low sense of confidence. These types of perception are usually brought about or worsened by negative self-talk. You know, I'm bad. I'm no good. And see, the interesting thing about pessimists is when something bad goes down, they think it's permanent. They think it's pervasive. And they think it's personal. Optimists don't see it that way. They see it as temporary. They see it as outwardly caused, not inwardly driven. You see the difference? So pessimists have a negative worldview of themselves and of others. And they feel like every failure that they have is just because of them. It's me. I'm a bad person, you know? And by the way, misery loves company. And so do pessimists. Who we choose to hang out with can influence our mindset for better or for worse. So something I've noticed through the years is some people, they like to, you know, gather with another group and talk about other people, you know, which is negative, or tell stories about other people. But there are some people that are just so negative. And what I find is when, you know, you put somebody with them, they become that way. And that's not good. So it's important for you to choose who you hang out with. Optimism is the exact opposite, obviously, of pessimism. Optimists approach problems from a position of empowerment. Some see overcoming adversity as a challenge, one that they will gladly attempt to conquer. Unfortunately, will is not always enough to solve problems. When optimistic people are confronted by failure, they view it as temporary and attribute the failure to the situation or as a matter of circumstance, whereas pessimists say it's all their fault. Dennis Waitley said, "Whether positive or negative, we move in the direction of our most currently dominant thoughts." Did you get that? What you think moment to moment, day to day, moves you in the direction that you're going to go, for better or for worse. James Allen says, "As a man thinketh," and I will add, "as a woman thinketh, so is he or she." Optimism is the stuff of hope. Words have power. I remember seeing a show. It was about quantum physics. It was called "What the Bleep Do We Know?" And the fascinating thing about that show is they had this Japanese scientist, and he was studying what would happen to water if you put words on the water. So he would put like these very negative words on the water, and then he would put very positive words on other jars of water. And the fascinating thing was the water changed. On the jars that had negative words ascribed to them, they became dark and putrid and nasty. And the words that had the jars that had positive words like love, serenity, peace, happiness, they became this beautiful color. So words have scientifically, not just through that, but through other experiments, have been shown to have power. So be careful about your self-talk and be careful what you say to others. So is it possible to learn how to be an optimist? According to Dr. Seligman, it is. This is what he says. He contends that anyone can make use of learned optimism. He calls it learn. Here's the book. Anybody can learn regardless of how pessimistic a person's outlook. Not all pessimists are the same. And he even gives you a test. You can go online, just Google Seligman. Test for optimism, and it will tell you the level of your optimism. And the good news is, if you're really low, his method will be most beneficial to you. But here's what he says. He says, we really learn to be optimists when the bad things come. And he calls it explanatory style. So when something bad happens to you, it's how you respond. It's your explanatory style, whether it's positive or negative. And he says that for pessimists, it's always, their explanatory style is that it's permanent, pervasive, and internal. Whereas for optimists, it's temporary, it's specific, and it's external. The next step is to assess people's reaction to negative situations. To do this, Seligman created a system based on Albert Ellis's theory, and Ellis was a psychologist, called the ABCs. Seligman added a couple of other things to it. But here's the deal. The first three letters stay the same: adversity, belief, consequence. The additional two in the new system stand for disputation and energy. Okay? So adversity means this is the event that causes the stress. I lost my job, or I got laid off. Belief, this is how a person interprets the event. The pessimist, my fault, I'm bad, I'm no good. All right? The optimist, They're lost. You know? I'm awesome. I don't know what their problem is, but they just lost somebody, a good employee. They're going to be sorry they lost me. They'll probably be calling me back before long, but I'm not going back because I'm going to find something better. So, belief. You have adversity, you have belief. Then you have consequence. The resulting action from the belief caused by the adversity. And oh, by the way, some people, they learn helplessness. And that's another whole other field of study that Seligman was in. They learned that with animals and human through experiments that they could teach animals and people to be helpless. You know, let's get this dog to jump. Let's teach him not to jump. No matter what we do, let's teach him not to jump over this barrier to get out of this box. And then we're going to give these loud noises to people, and we're going to observe them and see at what point will they stop doing something to stop the noise, to stop the pain. Okay? What they found was a lot of people just quit. They're like, hey, it doesn't matter what I do, you know, I'm going to get shocked. Or this loud noise is going to appear. Learned helplessness. But the fascinating thing was, one out of three of these people, no matter what, they kept trying. They kept trying. They kept trying. And that's what optimists do. The consequence, the resulting action from the belief caused by the adversity. So do you think the action of the person who was pessimistic is going to be have much energy attached to it? Do you think it's going to go in a very good direction? They may just lay down and say, oh, can't get a job, I'm a loser. You know? Loser! And then the other point, ABC, adversity, belief, consequence, disputation. Using evidence to challenge negative thoughts from A to C. That's what an optimist does. Okay? Using evidence. Hey, you know, I had something like this happen to me in the past, but you know what? I overcame it. I'm a good person. I have a lot of things going for me. Even though I don't have a job right now, I've got a lot of blessings in my life. You know? And I'm excited. I'm excited to go out and seek a new job. I was going to get bored with this thing anyway. And then finally, energizing. Once a person is able to condition themselves into positive thoughts and behaviors in response to A, B, C, they will eventually lead to a person feeling more energized. So, it's been proven, y'all, that positive thinking, that optimistic worldview, actually energizes you. Actually creates well-being. Actually contributes to your health. And some studies show that it actually increases longevity. They did some studies with cancer patients, and you can find these online, and they found that that the optimistic patients lived longer, and they dealt much better with the disease than those who were pessimistic. They also did a study, this was interesting, with a group of nuns. And they use their pictures. This was a group of nuns that made their commitment, and they had like this yearbook, and they studied what they called a dolce smile. It's, you know, a genuine smile, pretty much. You know, really genuine smile. And they separated those nuns from the nuns that kind of had the fake smile thing going, or the frown, you know. Yeah, this sucks. I'm going to be a nun. you know, and what was fascinating is they found that the ones that had the dolce smile, the genuine smile, they had their life trajectory was longer and it was better than the ones with the fake smile. And what they concluded from that was, hey, these nuns were the optimists, and these were the pessimists. Okay, I'm running out of time. Is it really worth it? going for optimism. Is it really worth it? Let's see. Is it worth it?
Yes. There's hard evidence that becoming an optimist is good for you and me. One such benefit is that it increases physical health. Most stress is dangerous to the body. Increasing levels of stress have been linked to high levels of inflammation, weaker immune systems, increase in headaches, and a whole bunch, a whole host of other somatic symptoms. I wrote my PhD dissertation, here it is. Social support as a resilience resource in mitigating the stress factors associated with human pregnancy. Now here's the deal with that, and this is why I bring it up here. They are finding through research that mothers who have the least amount of stress, mothers who are more optimistic in their thought, they have healthier children over the trajectory of a lifespan. Conversely, women who are under a lot of stress during pregnancy, they tend to have babies that are born too soon or born early. The babies tend to have physical ailments, autism. They tend to get sick more, and they tend to have more psychological, emotional issues than the group of women who are optimistic. And that's fascinating. And one of the studies that I read that really hit me over the head, it said, we are learning that the first 9 months in the womb have a profound impact over the life trajectory of the child for the rest of his or her life. Isn't that fascinating? I remember I sent this to the Chief of Navy Chaplains at the time, and I said, you know what? This is profound. I said, we need to start sending chaplains, have them make their rounds with pregnant women and make them a part of the whole, you know, what is that thing we did, Lamaze? You know, that whole process, and help them to deal effectively with stress. Because the implications of not doing so are going to be profound on their children. To me, that's big. So is it worth it? You better believe it. Where am I at? A recent UK study, and I'm almost done. Hang with me. A recent UK study examined the effects of optimism on the predictability of an injury and post-injury performance and found that as levels of optimism increase in sportsmen and women, the likelihood of injury occurrence decreased. Some studies have shown that optimism can be helpful in recovering from some forms of cancer and other diseases. Numerous studies have found that optimism is consistently related to longevity. Besides the physical and mental well-being benefits compared with pessimism that have been mentioned before. A U.S. study of nearly 100,000 students found that people who are optimistic are less likely than those who are pessimistic to die from coronary heart disease or from any other cause over an 8-year period. Similar studies have also confirmed this link between optimism and good health. The belief that good things will happen in life is called dispositional optimism, and it has been strongly connected with improved recovery rates after surgery and improved cancer survival rates. Optimism's the deal, y'all. It's the real deal. And it's something we need to be, I think. And what I like about Seligman's work is that it's not just hearsay. Yeah, it's good to think positively. You know, we've heard that. No, it's been proven. And it's continuing. They're continuing to do research that shows that optimism is a life-giving pursuit and has all kinds of benefits. So what that should say to us in the new year
is, man, let's be optimistic. Let's be positive thinkers. Let's be energetic about this thing. We only got one shot at life. We're on the playing field, y'all. You know? There are no timeouts and no substitutions. I mean, we're there. Let's be positive. Let's be optimistic. Seligman says, and again, I'm almost done. I promise. What we need is not blind optimism, but flexible optimism. Optimism with its eyes open. We must be able to use pessimism's keen sense of reality when we need it, but without having to dwell in its dark shadows. In closing, the mind is like a garden, and this is Ron Sturgis speaking, that requires constant tending lest the weeds of negativity and pessimism choke out the life of the good crop. The plants of our mind garden can consist of love, forgiveness, happiness, serenity, and all that is life-giving if we plant the seeds and tend the garden, which requires a lot of weed removal. Perhaps we need some weed and feed for the mind. Many, if not all, of the religious traditions of the world admonish us to be optimistic. For example, a passage from the New Testament says, "Rejoice always. Let your gentleness be evident to all. Don't be anxious about anything. Don't worry about anything. But in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to the Holy One. And the peace of the sacred other will guard your hearts and your minds." Finally, and this is awesome. "Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, whatever is pure, whatever is right, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things." Think on these things. "And if you do, the peace of the profound sacred other will be with you." In closing, that have been helpful to me, real quick. There used to be this place called Successories. I don't know if you remember it. It used to be a store. It was really cool. But they had these beautiful pictures. I bought these cards and I've kept them through the years and I look at them occasionally. But this one says, "Your true character is revealed by the clarity of your convictions. The choices you make and the promises you keep. Hold strongly to your principles and refuse to follow the currents of convenience. What you say and do defines who you are ever. I expect to pass through this world but once. Any good I can do or any kindness that I can show, let me do now. I shall not pass this way again. Resolve to be tender with the sympathetic, with the striving, and tolerant. Sometime in your life, you will be all of these. Successful is the person who and loved much, who has gained the respect of the world, a better place than they. Appreciation for the earth's beauty, for the best in others. Our lives are not determined by what happens." And this is probably the best one. "What happens to us. Act to what happens. Not the attitude we bring to life. Attitude causes a chain reaction of positive thoughts, events, and outcomes. It is a catalyst, a spark that creates extraordinary results. And finally, watch your thoughts, for they become your words. Choose your words, for they become your actions. Understand your actions, for they become habits. Study your habits, for they will become your character. Develop your character, for it becomes your destiny. Live long and prosper. And continue into the new year with a contagious optimism that will lift the level of consciousness for all of those who you encounter." And so it is.
I have We have a question and answer period, but I want to say something. I have a little Sarah Englebright little thing that came off the calendar that says, whatever you do well contributes to happiness. You do what you do very well. Are there more questions?
Yes. You have a choice as to whether you're going to be optimistic or pessimistic. And I used to do that a half class at full time classes. And one day it hit me that I was holding my victimhood to me as who I was. And it just came into my head and said, you're doing this, you were making this decision. And I decided I didn't want to be that way anymore. So it's up to you. It really is.
Good. Yes, ma'am.
Of the many self-help books I have absorbed and believe me, Wayne Dyer stands out because I had this on my refrigerator when my kids were young. You are the sum total of the choices you have made. If you don't like where you are, start changing your choices. I have to disagree with you.
Oh boy.
I don't think you can be an optimist.
That sounds pessimistic to me.
Or a pessimist. I think sometimes all you have to be is somebody who doesn't give up. Who doesn't fold. Who may not be optimistic that things are going to get better, but never, ever gives up.
Okay.
There you go.
And maybe that's the definition of optimism.
Yeah.
I usually don't speak up. I'm mostly a creative here, but I will comment today. I thought your presentation was excellent, and I was one of those people too that was pessimistic for a while. And one of the things that you touched on is the importance of words, and I found that positive affirmations really made a difference in my life. And there's an excellent book, it's The Greatest Salesman by Ogden Dino. And that book, you think it's about salesmanship, but it's not. It's about positive affirmation. And there are 10 scrolls. And if you read each one of those scrolls, 30 days before you can go to the next scrolls. And there's such things as, I will greet this day with love in my heart. And it's just excellent. I would go for it. Because I think that you talk to yourself, and you talk to yourself, changes how you are.
Well said. Thank you.
To piggyback on that, I have a neighbor who's suffered a severe heart attack, and this heart attack was brought on by stress. And in his recovery, in the rehab, he came to the conclusion, which he expressed to me, was, hey, don't sweat the small stuff. And you know what? It's all small stuff.
Yeah.
And I have taken that, and it certainly squares with my worldview.
Very good.
One of the things that we don't understand is what exactly goes on in your brain, right? To make you, for instance, a pessimist versus something. Anthropologically, going way back, how did pessimism start, you know? And how did, was it just a black and white, good and bad, scared, not scared? What was it? But now it's devolved into this thing where when we are stressed, we say that we know what hormones are going on. We don't really. We only know the ones we can measure and have figured out ways to measure. Other than that, we say, oh, adrenaline, serotonin, blah, blah, blah. But we don't know what else is going on there in very minute concentrations that we don't know about. And does this little bit does pessimism, which leads then to an expectation of a negative event in the future, is that something that produces in us something that then again provides some, ages ago, some anthropological benefit to us? We stay scared, or we run, or whatever it is, but nowadays we don't see it, we don't run, we don't know what it is, and we're not close enough to our own feelings and minds and bodies to know what's going on with us. You know? So it could be that pessimism is something that's brought about by some minute chemical changes in our body and is dissipated by what you're saying, by promoting this sensation of goodness and well-being and happiness. We don't know.
And oh, by the way, they're finding that pessimism, negative thought, is actually the causative factor in a lot of depression. Now, there are other forms of depression that are physiological and chemical, but most common depression that people, and we all experience it, a lot of it's caused by negative thought and by negative self-talk. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to say, excuse me, I wanted to say something about associating with people with the negative attitudes. Pessimist. I've had firsthand experience with this when I had a colleague one time that used to show up at my office every afternoon to complain about the same thing over and over and over. And being around all this negativity drains you of energy. Yeah. It pulls you down. And it got to the point where I had to ask her not to come anymore. I hated to do that, but I had to save myself from all that negative energy.
Yeah, and it's good sometimes you need, it's an optimistic thing, a positive thing to set boundaries. You know.
I have a little trick I do every time I start beginning to feel some negative thoughts or negative energy or whatever. I get in my imaginary little spaceship and I take a trip way out there to outer space and look down on that problem. It's amazing what a change of perspective does. This is great. One thing that kept me going through, you know, post-divorce and raising children by myself, though I wasn't totally by myself, but the fact that you have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, whether you feel like it or not. And that will eventually take you out of your depressed feelings, because day by day, you've made another day, you've made it another day. Look at what I made it through. I'm here.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. And I just want to say, when I come in this church and come in this room, I feel the power and I feel the energy of positivity and optimism, and it lifts me every time I come. By the way, Peter, did I convert you yet?
No, you didn't.
Okay. I had the baptismal water ready.